including the modern religion. But the one we can most identify with is the Christian religion for mm-hmm. the majority of people.
Right.
And I will only say this, is that all you have to do is look at the reptilian in the Garden of Eden, and when he had interfered originally with the overall plans, God, Jehovah, or whatever, came down and said, you haven't behaved like I've told you, you know, you've interfered. Now get thee underground. I will cast thee underground, and man's heel shall be upon your forehead, and you shall be at man's heel. In other words, they were cast underground. There are many ancient religions that talk about these reptilians being underground. Only one of them is the Hopi religion, where they talk about their ancestors not being human, but being snakes or reptilians. And they call them the snake people. And like we're coming full circle now from like the beginning of the show, the ant people and the snake people. They believe, according to their legends, that at the end of each great cycle, when these devastations happen, they're taken underground to safety by the ant people. And this area that they lived in was the underworld. And they finally came up after the devastation through a hole in the ceiling of this great underground cave or this underworld called the Sipapuni. Nobody has ever known where the Sipapuni is. And they've always thought of it as legend and myth.
In that case, John, this question may answer itself. It's from John up in Seattle, Washington. Given their underground status as of now, how did they survive the catastrophe that wiped out all other higher reptile life forms millions of years ago? And that kind of answers itself, I guess.
Right. If there's something happening on the surface, the immediate response is to try and go underground. Not only with our own government like they're doing now, but it's shown back in very medieval pictures, and it's even reported back in the times like the Velikovskian, you know, series of when they said that the great, you know, the stars fell from heaven and that there were great earthquakes. There's many depictions of people running for caves. If there was a more highly evolved form of intelligence in the age of the dinosaur, then perhaps their immediate instinct was to run for cover as well.
Mm-hmm.
When you start going underground, there are natural aquifers of fresh water traveling and great rivers in some cases.
That's
when this happens,
true.
It releases highly charged positive ions into the air, as well as releases a high content of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So you can live down in these areas. There's radium that lines the walls of some of these caves, which gives off a constant light. And there's also many other minerals within the earth itself that you could actually grow from. When this underground mythological Indian place, the Sipapuni, was said to be somewhere in the Four Corners area, they supposed, there was an article written by the Arizona Gazette, the Phoenix Gazette, back in 1909, where it talks about a man by the name of Kincaid traveling down the Colorado River on a skiff, and he had come across an underground city that was built into the walls of the Grand Canyon. It was big enough for 50,000 people to live in.
Really?
And when I initially read this article, I started a 4-year search to see if this could possibly be. What I've discovered is that in many outlying areas of where they would have carried that same article, even in the Yuma Examiner where this, you know, he apparently was, the microfilm is all there for every day except those 2 days that it was printed. So there's suspicion by omission.
You know, John, this is also interesting because there have been reports, rumors, myths, whatever you want to call it, some of them fairly substantial, that there's something going on in the Grand Canyon, that some area of it has been cordoned off to the public. Nobody's allowed to go near it. Nobody knows what it is. Have you heard those reports?
Well, they justify it by saying it's just dangerous.
However,
I can tell you that, I mean, honestly, after 4 years of research, I have finally located that exact same location where Kincaid had walked into the cave and found the Egyptian mummies, the metal that nobody could explain where it came from, the hieroglyphics that looked like they were from central Yucatan, but not, and the cat's eyes. And then, like I said, they said that there was enough room for 50,000 people to live in. But the question is this. is that if there were, in fact, 50,000 people in the Grand Canyon, there is no evidence on the surface of that area that 50,000 people ever walked that area.
Indeed.
So where in the world did they go? Now, I've recently been in touch with sightings regarding this, and we've talked about doing something on it and other people off on the West Coast, because when I finally released the full impact of my discovery of this location, it has such implications to it that it has to be done very gingerly, especially when I carry a lot of respect for the Hopi Indians. And this being their mythological place of the emergence from the underworld, it needs to be treated very delicately. And we're currently in negotiations with certain elements on the West Coast to try and get that out on the most widely spread way that we can.
Do you remember the old movie Journey to the Center of the Earth? I'm sure
yeah,
you do.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
Yes. Who is to know? But could there be portals somewhere on the Earth? Do you believe there are?
Yes.
That would lead, if not to the center of the Earth, very, very deeply into the Earth?
Absolutely. I believe that the Earth is like a human body in a way, that it has veins and arteries. And those veins and arteries are natural and unnatural caverns and tunnel systems. And there probably are some areas of the Earth that are more, you know, highly concentrated with tunnel systems, such as the Four Corners Southwest area, Central America, and the Andes area of Chile and down south in South America. One of the greatest reptilians, you know, you've heard these winged reptilians we hear about.
Yes.
The Draco. And then the non-winged. Well, one of the greatest winged reptilian religious symbols there has ever been, or deities, is that of Quetzalcoatl. And he was a very benevolent being that lived down in the Yucatan area and Mexico. And you're going to love this. This has got to do with a lot of my research. I know you're just probably going to jump off your seat. But revelations, when they talk about revelations, it means to reveal what was once hidden.
Yes.
And during these times, these things will be revealed, as will the reptilian life forms. Quetzalcoatl was the being that lived between 600 and 900 A.D. down in Mexico and also the upper Yucatan. And like I said, he was very benevolent. He went into an area where the Aztecs were ripping hearts out of people, and he said, no, no, no. He said, you know, just put some herbs up on the altar, and he taught them science. He was the one that the Mayans and the Aztecs attribute to teaching them the Mayan calendar. And we know the scientific, you know, significance of that.
Oh, yes.
The astronomical calendar. But then also, there are many relations between him and what we know of as the Christ. As a matter of fact, some people, like the Mormons of today's religions, believe that Quetzalcoatl was Christ reincarnate because he was just so benevolent in a very violent area. Anyway, through my research, I've realized through studying ancient archaeology and architecture, like in The Art and Architecture of Ancient America by George Kubler,
yeah.
He says that the most ancient of all archaeological ruins that are circular in formation are the result of the presence of the cult of Quetzalcoatl. That being, Quetzalcoatl means the feathered serpent, the being of the feathered serpent.
Do you connect all this, John, to the incredible sightings going on in Mexico? And I might add,
absolutely.
Ongoing in Mexico, hundreds of thousands of people are seen.
Absolutely. I have plans on going down to the first International UFO Congress in Mexico City in August and having the opportunity to talk down there regarding this, because I truly do believe that Mexico City is going to be the primary point of contact. Because if the Mexican people have already started to be conditioned to the more prominent presence there of these craft, and information outside the United States, if it's real close to us, we have an ability to control it, especially since the governments are so close now with all the monies being passed back and forth and deals being made. But also, it's easier to control the information if at first the people don't react properly or as expected. And when they do have this initial contact, if they react unexpectedly, then they can stop the information flow right away, as has you've seen they've been doing all along.
Well, they have. You're right. It's interesting, though. From those I've talked to who have been to Mexico and have investigated, they have found the Mexican people are actually beginning to get, I'm not going to say nonchalant, but they're beginning to be accustomed to seeing these things almost all the time.
Absolutely.
So that process is ongoing.
Oh yeah. And if they land there first, when finally they start reacting properly, or so that when we are finally able to see that they have been there and we don't see people running through the streets, then it'll help us react a little bit more calmly to the acceptance of their arrival. But also remember that Mexico City sits atop an ancient city of Mexico called Tenochtitlan. Tenochtitlan was the initial city created by the Aztecs. And of course, the ancient god of the Aztecs was Quetzalcoatl. Now, when Quetzalcoatl was done, this winged serpent being was done with all his divine work down there, he said, when he left, I will return one day and I will redeem my people, which is exactly the same promise as you've heard other religious deities throughout all Earth say.
Of course.
Right?
Yes.
So,
I believe all religions must, as a basic tenet, have a past history and a future promise.
Right. Absolutely. For us to have hope.
Indeed. John, hold on just one moment. We'll be right back to you. Okay. John, I'm telling you, I've got so many faxes here, I could never get to them all. Here is one that says, reptilian experience by a 10-year-old. The following abduction experience by my 10-year-old son had grays showing my son reptilians. Now, there's much too much. This is from Maui, Hawaii. And there's much too much for me to go into here. But with all of this contact and all of this interest, John, I'm going to ask that you again please give out the telephone number and address, would you?
Absolutely. I welcome anybody to send material to me and or just send that $10 and I'll money order a check and I'll send them a package of material. And the address is John Rhodes, that's R-H-O-D-E-S, Post Office Box 50381, Henderson, Nevada, 89016-0381. And in case you didn't get the address, you can call the voicemail system. It has the address on it again for you, which is 702-391-3335. And just to let everybody know, I'm not one of these researchers out there that's untouchable or that you can't talk to. I more than welcome people to get me information or to share their experiences with me if they feel that there's something that they can contribute to expanding my idea of what's going on. And time allowing, I'll try and get back in touch with you.
All right.
And then, of course, we have the tape that's $10, and then just add $2 in shipping and handling in there if you want to start finding out for yourself and you'd rather keep that experience a little more quiet.
All right.
That self-hypnosis tape.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John Rhodes. Hi.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Recently, all about a year or so ago, in Northern California, extremely Northern California.
Where are you, sir?
I am calling from the Ozarks.
Okay.
But in extreme Northern California, actually Fort Smith area, there was a lot of land, off-road land, rugged terrain, that was made off limits to the public. And for one reason or another, I think one government agency made it off limits to protect another one for whatever they were doing. And the reason for this is what appeared to be forest rangers were heavily armed with shoulder strap machine guns. Now, it made no sense at all, and I know they weren't looking for marijuana.
Well, that's not the reason to cordon it off. That is the amount of security to accomplish it. What do you think they were cordoning off?
I have no idea, but I know that they were not they were keeping it close under taps. Well, I mean, why in the world would they have shoulder strap machine guns in the first place? And this, like I said, in extreme Northern California up near the Oregon border.
All right. Well, I've got a fax here also, John, about Mount Shasta. There are a lot of stories about Mount Shasta.
Yes.
And are you familiar with the term Lemurians?
Yes, I am.
Is this a group who supposedly lives in or under Mount Shasta?
Well, from what I've been able to discover through my research and through the research of other people like Cherry Hinkle and Tal and like the other names I mentioned before, that appears that Mount Shasta is a shared facility, like a neutral base, like almost a Switzerland for many different races and beings. And that's why there's such a variety of different reports coming out of there of various different looking beings. As far as Lemuria and Mu and Atlantis, I do believe that, yes, I do believe that there were past continents and other words, past civilizations that were destroyed through their own cataclysms, and some of them did escape through the tunnel systems.
Tunnels.
Tunnel systems crisscrossed the world, not just here.
All right, fascinating. Hold on, John. Remember to get a copy of this program, which I can understand you might want. Call 1-800-917-4278. 1-800-917-4278.
Kingdom of Nine, you're hearing Dreamland with Art Bell. To participate in the program, call toll-free 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. This is the CBC Radio Network.
Boy, it sure is. A lot of interest around what John Rhodes is discussing, the human-reptilian connection. Underground tunnels, bases, perhaps even civilizations. Back to it in a moment. Anybody who knows anything about health, you know, those who actually study it, know the benefit of vitamin C. UCLA scientists found that vitamin C and the antioxidant value in it can help avoid cancer, strokes, heart attacks, and increase life expectancy an average of 5 years now. That's a lot of time. There are people paying $100,000 to get liver transplants that on average will give them 5 years more time. So what's it worth? What's it worth to feel better? Well, antioxidants fight free radicals. Basically, they make you old. They cause you to age faster, develop stiff joints, premature wrinkling, even degenerative disease. All that comes with getting older. Those are free radicals. Antioxidants clobber free radicals. Now, I know it's a strange name, but pycnogenols are antioxidants, strong ones. They work. Nick Jeromish of Wallace, North Carolina said, quote, several doctors wanted me to have open heart surgery, but after taking pycnogenols, the pain has disappeared in my chest and my hands and my feet are warm again. I can walk about 2 miles without getting out of breath, and the brown spots on my hands and forehead are clearing up. I feel so much better, end quote. To order pycnogenols, this food supplement I'm taking, call Natural Health at 1-800-856-1119. That's 1-800-856-1119. Now listen, these are the best. 95% pure grapeseed extract, purest on the market. 1-800-856-1119. Back now to John Rhodes. John, a lot of people want to talk to you, so let me take a couple of calls very quickly.
Great, okay.
All the way out to Maui, Hawaii, you're on the air with John Rhodes. How are you doing?
Hi, John. Thank you very much for the excellent information, and Art, thanks for a great program.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to mention that initially when I was listening to your show tonight, I was my guard was up and I started resisting the potential of having any connection with reptiles. But then I remembered an experience that my 10-year-old son had just a couple years ago, and I'll quote him on it. He, first of all, had experienced an alien abduction experience that described grays, entities with oval dark eyes, did not blink, etc. But what it is important is these entities showed Joshua, quote, bad aliens that had dark skin with many small bumps on them like a reptile. And the key point is the aliens said they did not fight them with weapons or try to destroy them, but they kept them at bay with their minds. My question is, has there been any other reports that reptilians are hostile, or are they more benevolent and friendly toward the human race?
Sorry?
Well, I believe that there are those that are benevolent, and I think there are those that are evil. It is the common law of nature, and it cannot be disregarded, that there's the positive and negative polarity of absolutely everything. Even an atom has a positive and negative pole to it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about human nature as well as nature of a living life form, I think that we are able to fluctuate between the negative and the positive polarities of whether we want to be good or evil as a matter of free will. Just as there are some people who may live in foreign countries under a crazy dictator who support perhaps, you know, public executions of large masses of people, there are those beings like Mother Teresa. And I think that's, I think you bring up a very good point, and that point is this great deceit that we come into that everybody's worried about, is that we have to look within ourselves and know within ourselves exactly who or what we're looking at. They say, there's an old saying, is know thee by thy deeds.
Hmm.
You know somebody by what they're doing, not by what they're saying or what they look like.
Well, it sounds like that man should personally communicate with you.
Oh yeah, I openly invite you to. I think that there's a lot to, I think there's a lot to learn between the two of us.
All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with John Rhodes. Where are you calling from, please?
Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Yes, sir.
I've studied reptiles for many years, and one of the things about reptiles that's rather interesting is that the male's genitalia are located in many species, most species, on both sides of the tail. There are two, and they have very unique shapes in such a manner that they will uniquely fit the female of that species and no other. There was a comment earlier about rape of abductees, and it seems to me that this would be one interesting way to try to validate those.
Well, that's an interesting point you're bringing up. I don't know the particulars of what you're talking about as regards to the sexual genitalia of the reptile as opposed to the human being. That's something that I haven't really looked into, so I couldn't give you an informative opinion on that.
Well, if for no other reason that most reptiles have two, that ought to be an interesting cross-check, and the fact that these things are very oddly shaped, very, very oddly shaped.
And probably quite popular.
They would probably be very painful, as a matter of fact.
Well, I know that there are the reports of the forced rapes, and I'm not sure if there are different reptilians as far as different physical species of them. But then again, you know, there's human differences of our own species, like you have the pygmy, and then you have the, you know, the tall people of Africa, and then you have the albinos. So I'm not willing to say at this time as to, you know, as to whether they are just of one type.
All right, here's a fact for you. Yes, the primitive brain positioned on top of the human spinal cord has long been referred to as the reptilian brain by academics. This information is not news. The primitive human brain, often referred to as the reptilian brain, performs the usual and ordinary biological functions which are common with the reptile and higher vertebrates, breath, hunger, thirst, excretion, sex, and so forth. Would your guests not agree the great developmental divide between the reptile and the higher vertebrates is the affection of the parent for the young? The reptile and lower animal classes abandon the egg or young upon discharge. The reptile does not protect, feed, or care for its young. The higher vertebrates, beyond and above reptilian biological divide, care for the young in varying degrees.
God, that I couldn't have said it better myself. And that fax, the person that sent that fax in, is right on target. This possibly explains the large amount of abductions with people where they're being made to hold the children. Because if it's in fact the case that they are looking at our affection for children, as they apparently are doing, you know, through abductions where these ladies are made to hold the babies.
Yes, oh yes.
And then they sit back and watch, and they're really amazed at it, and they're just taking in everything they can.
That's, I've heard many stories.
This would make total sense. It really would.
It really would.
And we've got to remember that the reptiles, primarily people think of them as giving birth to an egg. Well, there's the reptile like the adder, the snake that's the adder that actually gives birth to its young without the egg. So, you know, I think that, whoever sent that fax in, please get in touch with me.
Well, the person sending the fax is named Don from Redmond, Washington, so be so notified, Don. He'd like to hear from you. On the wild card line, you're on the air with John Rhodes.
Yes, this is Michael in Wichita, Kansas.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
And I had a material comment about blackouts in the coast, both coasts, and if that has anything to do with Project HARP that I've heard related to on your show before.
Okay, I would answer that. I think not. I don't know that for sure, but I don't think the blackouts relate to HARP. They occurred prior to HARP's beginning its activity, so I will leave that one there. First time caller line, you're on the air with John Rhodes. Hi.
Hi, Art. Congratulations for a great show. This is New Orleans calling.
New Orleans, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Art, several weeks ago you had a UFO a guest on that talked about UFOs, and he brought up a particular incident where the United States military had surrounded a downed craft, went on board, discovered that the occupants were reptilian-type occupants on board, and went in, apparently in a alcove of this spaceship, discovered human remains, human bones, and I was wondering if your guest had any knowledge of that incident or any similar incidents.
John?
Well, I don't have any knowledge of that particular incident. As far as reports of them having the remains of human beings on board, it's quite possible. I wouldn't say that they were the cause of that person's demise, but they could have been.
All right, I'm going to ask you about I'm going to give you two weird questions. You can ignore them if you like. We mentioned Journey to the Center of the Earth earlier. If you had an opportunity, John, to travel very, very deeply into the Earth, if you found a porthole that would take you there, would you go?
Yes. I would not go without deep prayer beforehand.
But you would go?
Yes.
The next question involves an Associated Press story a number of years ago that has always stuck with me. Somewhere in Scandinavia, I can't recall where it was, they drilled what they thought to be the deepest hole ever drilled by man. And maybe you can update me. They lowered microphones, sound microphones, into this hole. And they heard sounds of human agony and screaming and torture. Thousands of voices, or what appeared to be that. And they actually ran that on the Associated Press. Now, I remember the story and held it in my hand off the wire and talked about it. It was really weird. And then you never heard anything more about it. How deeply have we ever gone into the Earth? Do you know?
Well, I do know that according to RAND Corporation documents and the documents from, like, DARPA and such agencies, they've said that there have been studies to actually build underground bases as far as 8,000 feet underground.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's quite a bit distant.
It sure is.
It appears, from what I've been able to see, that as far as tectonic plate shift and earthquakes, most earthquakes happen on a fairly shallow level. And there is a theory out that the deeper you go, the actual it is safer for you to be. And that if anything did shift over you with the current technology, with the nuclear boring tunnel boring machines that they have, that you could just drill your way out. As far as the screams and everything,
had you ever heard that report?
Yeah, I'd heard the report. I mean, did they drill through the ceiling of hell?
Well, that's the obvious implication.
Implication,
sure.
Right. And it could be maybe that everybody was imagining that that's what they were going to do. So, and that's just what they heard. Maybe it was a collective, you know, hypnosis of some sort.
Maybe it was. The
right.
only thing about it was they claimed they had it on audio tape.
Well, I haven't heard it.
And I would love to. John,
yeah, I would
we'll
too.
Have you back on Dreamland again. And B, I might think about having you on one Friday night, Saturday morning, if you have the time on the regular syndicated program.
That's the marathon program you have?
You call it the marathon program.
Yeah, it's great.
I guess, yeah, 5 hours a night. That's right.
Yeah, it's great.
It is great. It's a lot of fun. And if you ever get a, do you ever stay up late?
Well, I try not to, but I tend to be up at many times, 2-3 in the morning at my computer doing my research and writing.
I understand.
So I do enjoy your shows.
Okay, well then maybe one night we'll plan ahead, and on a Friday night, Saturday morning, you can go get a nap on Friday, and we'll do a show.
I think that could be possible.
It is fascinating, John, because of the. I think there's a natural human curiosity about what is below us. We almost know more about what is above us at this point
right.
than what is below us, don't we?
Yes, and it's been very difficult for researchers such as Tal and Cherry Hinkle and Bill Hamilton and the others to be able to put this word out about we have to start looking underneath our feet. I think the majority of the reason why it's been so hard to have other researchers in the field take it seriously as seriously as it should be taken, is number one, with the advent of video cameras, it's easy for us to start getting hooked on looking above our heads because it's just right there for us at times.
Sure.
And when it's underground, we really don't have anywhere to go with that other than to look at the logic and listen to the information that's being provided. Many of these installations and natural cavern systems are very inaccessible. The one, for example, in the Grand Canyon that I discovered is extremely dangerous to try and get to. And I wouldn't suggest that anybody, you know, should they find something like that, just go alone.
Don't try this.
Absolutely not.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John Rhodes. Hi.
Yes, I'm calling from St. Louis.
St. Louis, yes, sir.
Yes, I have a friend of mine. I read a book once about underground caverns and stuff, and this one guy I was talking to here at work, he grew up in an area... I believe it's Creve Coeur, but there's a lot of caves out in that area. And he said that twice he's seen some odd-looking creatures out there around these particular caves. And he's offered many times to take me out there to the area where it was at. But he says he knows exactly where they were coming from. And he said the one night that he got the best look at them, he said that he had pulled off the side of the road in his car, you know, because he was changing a flat tire.
Right.
And he said that with his brake lights, he's seen these two creatures. He said they were about 4 foot tall or something like that. He said they ran across one side of the road. He said they were like in this farmer's field. And he said they ran in like a kind of hobbling fashion. And he said they jumped, you know, across the road over to these weeds on the other side toward the caves. And he said, you know, with the brake lights, he could see them, you know. And he said that one of them stuck his head up through the weeds, you know, looking at him, and he said it was only like 40 feet away. And he said it had a large head and it had large black eyes. So he said he jumped up and took off running, you know, and left the car there, you know.
I think I would, too.
Yeah, have the tow truck driver go get it.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
But he's offered many times to take me, you know, to the area where he said they're at. And also, I know another guy.
Sounds like you have not yet taken him up on that.
No, I didn't.
All right. Well, I don't blame you, sir. We don't have much time. We've got to run. John, given an opportunity to actually be abducted by some of the creatures that you suspect exist, or not be abducted, would you be curious enough to say, okay, take me, I'm out of here? Or would you be more tempted to run like hell?
I think it's one thing talking about an alien species. It's another thing looking at one eye to eye.
You betcha.
I mean, a lot of us don't understand that. We can give lip service to, oh, yeah, well, we're ready. You were ready. I'm ready, you know. But when one's sitting there close enough for you to feel its breath upon your forehead because
right.
of its size.
I agree.
And its muscular structure is so much more, I mean, much more profound than you could ever imagine. You feel so small and out of control that the first thing that goes is your knees. So, no, I wouldn't say that I'd be open for just anybody. I still feel that that's a violation. However, I believe that if we call upon our divine being within us, during that time of an abduction, we can actually command in the name of that power within us for it to stop. I would not say that we're all victims. I think that many people, starting at childhood, give permission initially to be abducted because they have no fear and they have this great wonderment, and
all right.
Children do.
Look, we're out of time. There's never enough time. Give out your address and phone number one more time.
Okay. If you'd like to receive a package of information concerning this, send $10, money order or check. And if you'd like to receive the self-hypnosis cassette for abductees, the same amount, please add $2 additional for shipping and handling to John Rhodes, that's R-H-O-D-E-S, Post Office Box 50381, Henderson, Nevada, 89016-0381. And if you need that address again, just call the voicemail. That's area code 702-391-3335. And I'd like to take this opportunity to really thank you very much for all the great work that you've been doing through all the years. You know, you really have stepped out on a limb when you first started coming out with this information, Art, and you've actually created waves that have felt repercussions not only locally, internationally and internationally, but I'm sure dimensionally as well.
John,
you will be remembered.
Thank you. I live on limbs. John Rhodes, we'll have you back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Art.
Take care. Remember, our bulletin board number is area code 702-727-1709. To get a tape of this or any other program, call 1-800-917-4278. From the high desert adjacent to Dreamland, good night.
This has been Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped. Yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. Please join us again next week at this time for Dreamland.